Part C. In this part of the test, you'll hear two different extracts. In each extract, you'll hear health professionals talking about aspects of their work. Choose the answer, A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. Complete your answers as you listen. Now look at extract 2. Extract 2. You hear an occupational therapist called Tom Evans giving a presentation about research into lifestyle changes for older patients. You now have 90 seconds to read questions 1 to 6.
My name's Tom Evans, and I'm a specialist in occupational therapy for the over 60s. In my presentation, I'll be discussing several research studies which have looked at the impact of recreational activities on healthy ageing. I should emphasise that many of these studies have a strong neurological underpinning, and I'm no expert in that field, but I felt it'd be helpful to summarise the principal findings which make it clear just how many choices are available for enhancing the psychological as well as physical welfare of older patients. For example, it's well known that health professionals are looking for ways to prescribe drugs like painkillers and antidepressants less, that they're turning to what's known as lifestyle prescribing. Research suggests that initiatives like this can cut visits to emergency departments and GP practices by as much as 25% amongst this age group. I look first at a Danish study. This investigated the effect of doing different sports on longevity. Any kind of exercise is likely to lengthen lifespan. Numerous studies over many years have confirmed this. But this new research yielded some intriguing findings on the effect of doing specific sports. It turns out the most beneficial sporting activities shared two key aspects. At least one other person was involved, and the activity itself was perceived of as being fun. Indeed, tennis and badminton came out on top, with an increased life expectancy of 5 to 10 years amongst regular players. Meanwhile, much commoner choices amongst participants in the study, such as weightlifting and treadmill running, which are often solo, repetitive activities, resulted in only an average of 1.5 extra years of life. Many small-scale studies have been conducted with a similar focus over several years, but I felt the Danish study was particularly persuasive because of its scope. It had over 8,000 subjects and was conducted over 25 years. But most crucial is the fact that it involved people from different backgrounds, analysed in terms of their general health, education and economic status. This is what, in my view, sets it apart from many other investigations which have tended to use more opportunistic sampling. I'll turn now to a very different type of recreational activity, making music, and its potential impact on dementia. A recent study conducted in the USA set out to gauge the effects of learning a musical instrument on cognitive impairment. Surprisingly few studies had previously been done on this. There's seldom a shortage of older musicians willing to contribute, but it's been hard to ascertain the influence of genetic as opposed to lifestyle factors on dementia. But this particular study overcame the problem by working with identical twins, over 150 pairs of them. The findings are clear. Irrespective of what's being played, be it piano, trumpet, or drums, the risk of dementia is significantly reduced in people playing music. One possible explanation for this is the fact that playing an instrument enhances the so-called cognitive reserve, the brain's ability to be resilient in the face of degeneration. Turning now to my own research work on the potential value of dancing in older age. For this study, my team recruited 20 people in their 60s to do weekly exercise sessions. 10 people were taught dance routines, and the other 10 did brisk walking. After 3 months, people in both subgroups saw an augmentation in the hippocampus, the area of the brain responsible for memory and learning. This finding confirms that of many other studies conducted over the years. However, our dance group participants also developed much better balance than the walkers, and there was a reduction in the number of falls amongst them. The incidence of these is so common and has such dire consequences that I feel this finding is of potential value, despite the fact that it was a small-scale undertaking and needs further investigation. Therapy can be offered to help people find a suitable activity to make their later years as healthy and rewarding as possible. The last study I'll talk about was conducted in Finland, looking at the effect of different types of counselling for people at risk of getting Alzheimer's. A 2-year trial involved 60 to 75-year-olds with risk factors for memory disorders. One group was given standard counselling, and the other was given enhanced lifestyle counselling, which included guidance on recreational activity. Each group incorporated people with the APOE4 gene, which is known to increase the probability of developing Alzheimer's. The findings show that enhanced lifestyle counselling prevented cognitive decline, despite the presence of the dementia risk gene. Reviewing the findings of this study left me feeling puzzled. Why isn't there more investment in counselling for the elderly? It could help reduce spending on care for Alzheimer's patients. So, before I go on to the next topic,
that is the end of Part C. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers.